Hi, I'm Vernon Trollinger for Optometry Times, and this is 10 questions for Chris Levens, OD, MS, FAAO, Chief of Internal Clinics at the Eye Center at the Southern College of Optometry.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up on the East Coast, in a suburb of Washington, D.C. My dad was a federal government employee, and so from the time I was born till graduating high school, it was always in the Washington, D.C. area. In fact, I went to high school in Washington, D.C.
What area of D.C.? Was it?
It was in Maryland, so it was due north of the city. And then after I went to optometry school, I actually went in the Air Force and was stationed in Washington, D.C., so we moved back there. And I was pretty almost equidistant between D.C., Annapolis, and Baltimore, a little bit closer to Baltimore and Annapolis.
How did your Air Force ROTC experience affect your optometric education and expectations?
You know, the high school that I went to was a day school. It wasn't a boarding school, but it was a military high school. It was a private school, but it was all military. And so at a really early age, I had an inclination to join the military, and the offerings of ROTC scholarships for undergrad certainly propelled me in that direction. And really helped me afford to go to Tulane University, which I probably wouldn't have been able to afford to go to at the time. So I was slated to be, I don't know, either a weapons officer, or I was majoring in math and economics, and so I was also going to be one that, essentially a buying officer that bought stuff for the Air Force. But I was always interested in eyes, and so I essentially asked the Air Force for a sabbatical, so I could fund my own way through optometry school with the agreement that I would come back in the Air Force in whatever capacity they needed me. But as an optometrist, the presumption was they could use me in that capacity.
I think you served in the Air Force for 5 years, am I right, more or less?
Yes, it was about 5.5.
And then ultimately transitioned to SCO around, I think, 2000. Why academia versus private practice or continuing the military or going in the industry?
Sure. Well, for the military piece, my wife, also an optometrist, we graduated from the same optometry school, and for a number of reasons, she eventually was in the Air Force as well. And when you have the exact same career in the same service, your options of where you can move around the world are very limited. And I don't think either one of us wanted to be apart. And then secondarily, if one of us stayed in the military, move every 3 to 4 years, and the other one trying to find a new job. And so we knew that we weren't going to be in long term. So for the majority of the last few years of Air Force work, I was an associate in a two-office private practice, and my wife was an associate in a single-office private practice, all of those in Maryland. And it was one of those life crossroads. We were opting to either buy into two different private practices where we would be partners, or this offer came from academia. And at the time, we had two young babies, so they were mobile. We didn't have to worry about their schools or their friend networks. And it was a very tough decision. And really, I don't think it was a right decision. We just decided that if we were ever going to experiment as a faculty member, it was the prime time in our lives to do that, so let's take the risk, and if it didn't work out, we would opt for private practice after that. But now, 17 years later, it seemed to have worked for us.
So as an educator, what three big things do you advise optometry students?
In no particular order, lifelong learning is a phrase that we kind of throw out there, but it's critically important that we graduate from optometry school, we feel really confident with all this information that we're armed with, but the world changes at such a fast pace, and eye care is changing, and technology is changing at such it's almost warp speed today, that if we don't devote specific time to keeping up, the world's gonna pass us by educationally. And we want to provide the best care we can for our patients, and the only way to do that is to keep up on information. And it's not easy. You know, we have life challenges. We have families. We have PTA meetings and soccer games and travel and hobbies. And we're tired after a long day of work. but forcing some time to pick up a journal or pick up an article and just to keep learning is really, really important. So that would be number one. Number two is to have some outlet, you know, not just eye care all day long, but have some other thing that you do in life to kind of free your mind up and expand your mind in a different area. So something completely different. And I think that enables us to really enjoy life and not just think about work 24/7. And of course, those things can evolve over the course of time. But having some other different outlet just for personal growth and personal well-being, I think is really, really important. And the last thing is that optometry is a small profession. We're really in this together. We want to help each other out. I mean, in some sense, sometimes we're competitors, but at the end of the day, we want each other to do well. We want this profession to do well. We want our patients to do well. It's still a great profession. I would do it all over again tomorrow. I really believe that. But we really need collegiality and support from each other to really drive this profession forward.
I think you just started a PhD program in the UK.
I sure did.
Why did you decide on getting a PhD, and why in the UK?
Yeah, good questions. Okay, so I always try to look for what's next and something I haven't done yet and a new challenge. So several years ago, I was the chief of primary care at SCO, and I wanted to aspire to be competitive for this chief of staff job should it ever come about. And so at that time, I decided that I would be more competitive if I did a master's degree in healthcare administration. So I tackled that. I learned some really interesting things at the time. I learned about computers and EHRs before they came to being. And so it really armed me with some information that was really coming quickly, as an example. Well, now, fast forward in time, I've been in this role for a long period of time. And one of the things, optometrically, I do for fun, this is kind of nerdy, but I like clinical research. I like exploring a question that needs to be answered and finding a way to answer that question and doing my best job to answer it. And so I've been doing clinical research alongside of my job for a great many years. Well, if I would look for the next chapter in my academic life, I'd like to take on more of that. And I think that I would be better armed with a PhD background to take on more clinical research. And so that was the motivating factor. Next, your question was about UK versus States. Well, though the degree PhD is the same, the mechanism by which the PhD is accomplished is quite a bit different. In the United States, the PhD program is very much classroom-based for the majority of time in leading up to a thesis, whereas in the UK, it's more project-based. And so in order for me to continue my full-time job, the design of the UK program seemed to make more sense. And it just so happened that the SCO had been fostering relationship with a institution in Cambridge for a few years in which both institutions were toying with the idea, hey, we'd love it if one of your faculty members would do this. Well, it was the right place, right time for me, and I ended up raising my hand and said, yeah, I'll do that. So, like anything in life, when you take on an arduous task, there are many days where I feel like, hey, I got this, and I'm feeling really good, and there are many days like, I'm like, holy moly, I'm way overwhelmed. Can I really do this? And so it's a very sinusoidal, emotional journey, but take it one day at a time, and I'll get there.
If you could ask your fellow ODs to do one thing differently, what would that be?
Do something different tomorrow than you've done today. And we use tomorrow very loosely as a defined time frame. You know, like a lot of things in life, it's very easy to do what's comfortable and to do what you've always done. But in order to get a different result and a new result and propel forward, we have to be able to do things differently. And we already kind of discussed how quickly things are changing You know, optometry in all likelihood is going to look very differently in the next 5 years, let alone the next 20 years. And if we are not agile and adaptable and looking for how things can change and embrace them rather than bury our heads and assume they're going to go away, the field's going to pass us by. And so adaptability and looking for opportunities to do things differently is the only way that I really see permanent success in optometry.
So what's something your colleagues don't know about you?
A couple things, I guess, that kind of are somewhat in contradiction to one another. And it's a couple things that I love to do with my wife, and they're in contradiction because they both at some point involve food. My wife and I are both foodies.
Uh-huh.
We not dining out per se, but we love to cook. We love to find brand new recipes and creations that we've never made before and pair them with wine. So we're winies and foodies all day long. So if there's one hobby that we share together, it's that one. But the contradiction piece is the other hobby that we have is physical fitness. I mentioned before, I'd love it if folks found a different outlet than optometry, and it so happens that my wife actually became a certified physical trainer. So she took a in-person, in-depth, full-time course, and then took a national test of one of the three leading organizations in the world, and she is a trainer on the side. And so she and I explore physical fitness and nutrition on some days, and the other days we throw it all out the window and cook in butter and enjoy the food and wine.
Well, they're not, you know, not necessarily mutually exclusive. I mean, you can have one with the other in moderation. That's the
secret. In moderation, true.
That's the secret how it all works. With that in mind, then that brings us to the next question. Then, what's your guilty pleasure food?
A guilty pleasure, risotto.
Ah.
Risotto obviously is rice, and so it's full of starch, and generally complete, you know, that recipe is completed with the addition of cream and cheese, and so it's full of calories, but it is stock full of flavor, and because we like the process so much, in order to make a good risotto, you are stirring and stirring and stirring, stirring so much that your hands and arms get tired. And we have to trade off because it's really a processed meal. It's a meal that will take a couple hours to prepare and then finish. So it's honestly that's what I love. I love finding something that's a half a day project from let's make a plan, let's go shop, let's unpack, let's prepare, let's cook, let's eat. So something that takes up a half a day, whether it's a Saturday or a Sunday, that's my glory day. So risotto is my guilty pleasure. Part two to that. Uh-huh. Is peanut butter. I consume more peanut butter than I think most humans would consume in a year.
Crunchy or creamy?
Both. I don't care. Just give me a spoon. I don't need a cracker, a piece of bread, a spoon, and I'm a happy boy.
Do you go down to the local organic store and grind your own there?
Oh, I love doing that. That's fantastic. But I also get it out of the jar, even the generic store brand.
What's something about optometry that you want to change?
Well, this really ties into my motivation for PhD as well as doing research. I want to make clinicians' job easier and more consistent. I try to look for things that doctors don't agree with, and I don't mean in a way that somebody's right and somebody's wrong. But I look for things that we do on patients all the time, but either the way that we do it, the instrument that we use, the grading scale that we use, some factor in there makes us look at the same eye, the same tissue, and make a different clinical judgment or interpretation of the exact same finding. And I try to explore opportunities to drive more consistency to make our jobs easier. Because, you know, we, like the rest of the world, have to do more with the same byproducts in order to be successful. We cannot operate at the same pace we did. So we have to see more patients quicker, more efficiently, and hopefully more accurately. And one way to do that is to drive consistency in a way that we haven't seen it before.
Do you have any regrets?
Oh, sure. I wouldn't say not professionally, personally. There's things in my life that I realize that we're human and we make wrong choices, and sometimes we have to pick ourselves up and drive in a different direction. And it's for that reason that, you know, and this is an overused term and it's potentially got some negative connotations, but I'm absolutely a born again Christian. You know, I grew up in churches and I went to parochial school, but I never really did open my heart in the way that I do today. And so whereas years ago, when a decision in life had to be made, I looked at that decision through my own personal filter. And today I look at that same decision through a more spiritual filter, and it helps me make the right decision over and over again. It's not something I generally talk about because I know that we're sensitive to those issues in the world, but it's something now I wear in my sleeve because it really does drive me as a human being.
Now for our last question, we inflict this one on everybody. What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
Probably the craziest thing I've ever done is something that lots of people have done. So it's not necessarily unique to me, and that is jump out of a plane. It was not part of my military requirements. It was completely for hobby. But when it comes for hobby, at least back in the day, there was not a whole lot of safety precautions. This was no tandem where someone is driving it and I'm on their back or they're on my back. This is a prop plane with a strut that connects the wing to the plane in a diagonal fashion and a small step outside the door. And this is after about 4 hours of prep work in the field, fly up in a prop plane, crack open the door, and the instructions are, all right, you put your feet on that step and hang off the strut, and when we give you a thumbs up, you let go and then pull your chute. And so when I think about it, there's no way we would do that today. Uh-huh. But that was the way it was done. And it
How
was
did you get
the,
into that fix?
My friend came up with a crazy idea.
Let's go skydiving.
and for a moment, it was the scariest thing I've ever done. Once that moment ceased, you kind of forget about that. It's very peaceful. But at that moment, wow, is it scary.
When you were hanging off the strut or just when you
Yeah, and the reality is the wind is coming so fast, you can't hang off it. As soon as you get your hands on that, the wind blows you off. So I didn't even see a thumbs up.
What was the process that your friend got you up into that? I mean, Lynn does not say, hey, let's go and do this today.
Oh, it was. It was a matter of, hey, you want to go skydiving tomorrow? And I said, okay, sure. Sounded like a good idea at the time.
Okay, Chris, it's been just great talking with you this morning.
Thank you
for having me, making time for me.
My pleasure.